And so the next loop, I pushed way too hard, and it ate me up. And so I ended up really just suffering through for the next 3 hours. I would run maybe for 30 seconds, and then I was walking again. And so I just kept on going, and because that's what I trained for, was to do it no matter what. Because a lot of my training is training my mind to push through the pain and endure it no matter what.
You're listening to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, and this is Trail Talk, where we have casual conversations with all kinds of runners. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultra runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation will go. So if you're ready, let's get started. Hey, welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. My guest this week is Ryan Steiner. He is an ultramarathon runner, and I saw him on Facebook and thought he would have a great some great stories about his journey to becoming an ultramarathon runner. So, welcome Ryan to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And you and I know you just came back from Kettle Moraine. Is that how you pronounce
Kettle it? Moraine, yeah.
Kettle Moraine, yeah. I've been
saying it wrong all this time. Hey, I pronounce things wrong.
Yeah, you were a live commentator. What were you doing there?
Yeah, I was a live commentator. And then I worked during the day. I was a live commentator. And then I worked the overnight aid station for the Henri Mule trail team. Their aid station.
Okay. And then I also saw that you had run a race. The last race that I saw you had run was it the Galena Sky 8 hour, which is also by Henri Mule. So is that kind of in your, they put on races kind of in your area?
You know, it's funny that I fell in love with a racing company that is kind of not right in my area. I really like the Henri Mule Racing, their whole the community mindset that they have. And I branch out sometimes, but I prefer to do their races. But it's about a 6 hour drive depending on the race that I do. And I always have to drive through downtown Chicago to get there. And
oh my goodness.
I'm terrified of traffic. So I'm like, the adventure starts the night before for me. So
yeah. And I talked to somebody who was just in Chicago, and I live in Kansas City. They were up there, and they said traffic in Chicago is nothing like what we have around here. So
no.
They said it was always kind of crazy. So
and I'm autistic, and rules, they like written rules are very comforting to me. So things like speed limits and stuff like that, I try to follow them. But the speed limit in Chicago says 45 is the posted speed limit. Mm-hmm. And if you go less than 60, you're literally in danger. So,
yeah. And I know that the traffic in most major cities is that way. The speed limit is usually, you know, we have to move for me, you know, I move with traffic, and that's usually somewhere above the speed limit.
Yeah. So, the speed limit is a suggestion.
Yeah. Yeah. and then there's always somebody driving, you know, one or two people who are driving faster, which is dangerous for everybody. As long as everyone's going the same speed, it's kind of like, okay, it's understood. I could understand how, you know, you would have that though. It would be uncomfortable having to, you know, kind of break the rules.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, the post that I caught my attention when you posted, you said you were out running and you had some people bullying you.
Yeah.
And so then you talked a little bit about your story on Facebook. So I know most of the time I tell people, how did you get started running? But your journey to becoming a runner started, it was rather a, I think there's a story behind it. So I'd like for you to kind of share your story of your transformation, where you were at, and what brought you to being an ultra runner.
I've always been overweight, and when I was younger, I had an adult telling me what I could eat. So it was a little more controlled. But when I was left to my own devices, I really just, it was how I comforted myself, because I'm autistic and, I do all right in a lot of areas, because I compensate by using self-soothing things. And so I self-soothed with food, and life was very uncomfortable. And so I ate a lot of food. Mm-hmm. Then my, I started to notice that I couldn't move, and I was young. And, so I tried a lot of things. I obsessed over finding what would work for me. And I've done a lot of extreme things to lose the weight, and I couldn't. I would lose a few pounds here and then gain it right back, plus more, over and over and over. And when I was around 35, I had lost enough weight that I was exploring different fitness things, because I had discovered eating vegan and how you could really almost reverse damage done to your body and cardiovascular system just by what you're allowing in. And so by that, I started like really following and reading vegan people's stories. So I encountered this person who had run an ultra marathon, and I was like, what the hell is a ultra marathon?
Yeah.
And I love movement. I pace even at my heaviest, I still paced. Mm-hmm. So I would find what speed I could move at and keep constantly moving forward. And so what drew me in about the ultra marathon was that it wasn't about being fast. It was about finding the speed with which you could move on continuously for really long, ridiculous amounts of time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was about enduring that instead of mm-hmm. being fast. And that drew me in really quick, because I wanted a solution. Uh-huh. And movement was already a solution to my mental state. So,
Okay. So that was, it was a natural, natural attraction for you.
Yeah.
So that's cool. So you went like from not really being very athletic to saying that I'm going to be an ultra marathon runner.
Yeah. Well, I downloaded a 5K app on my phone, because I knew you had to start somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I just knew that in the end, my goal was not to run a 5K. It was to do an ultra marathon.
Wow. Cool. So what was your first ultra marathon?
Last year, I was signed up to do the Hennepin in person, the Hennepin 100, okay. the 50K. And it got canceled because of COVID. And so I kind of was like, oh man, I've been working so hard at this. And someone suggested that I just kind of do it self-supported. And they did end up opening a virtual one. So I did a self-supported 50K in October on the same day the race was supposed to be held.
Of last year. So last year was your last October was your first ultra marathon. Wow. So how long was your journey for weight loss? I mean, from the time you started, well, you said you started doing vegan. Then you started moving, some sort of walking. How long was that journey before you were able to run an ultra marathon?
About 10 years.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a long-term goal.
Yeah.
Yeah. you set the goal to run an ultra marathon.
Yeah.
And so that's what you were working for the entire. So I guess my question, how did you keep yourself focused?
I mean, sometimes I get unfocused.
a 10 year goal is hard for anybody to do. I mean,
I've had things derail me, but I get pretty obsessed with things, and goals, and it's so personal. It's reinforced in the running world. Whereas in other worlds where you may not be the normal of something, people aren't, they don't embrace that and go, even though it's a long shot, I just, you know, it's not as encouraging as the running community is. Mm-hmm. So people see you out there running and like the kids that bullied me, they were on their bikes, right? And they don't understand what it takes to be a runner. But runners understand what it takes to run. So even though I'm going slow, they can see the body mechanics and that I'm running and I'm fat. And so they're like, wow, go brother. And they just, you know, they just cheer me on. And that's really reinforcing, especially when most of my life has been more that bullying type interactions. And so I feel like when I start to deter from that goal and like feel discouraged, then I sign up for a race and I get that running community atmosphere. And then I found it in the Facebook groups during COVID, which I had never really, I don't do social media. The social is in the word and I kind of shy away from that. I'm more of a find me out in the woods, trying to figure out how to survive off the land kind of person. But in my 30s, ultra running and pursuing this has given me a way to connect with other people. So it became a whole life thing. And so it's part of my identity now, and that keeps me going.
That's good. So do you find, I mean, there are people who are insensitive in every group, even those who are accepting. Have you run into those kinds? I'm thinking of a person that I talked to, Kath Wallace. She's from in Australia. Her first race, it was a 100K. It was an ultra marathon, and someone looked at her and said, "Are you sure you wanted to?" So they judged her by her body type, even though they were a runner. Do you still run into that a few places, or are they?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I was, you know, I want to make a race report about, Kettle Moraine, and I haven't done it yet because I'm still processing everything. And it was an amazing experience, but I also want to be able to include into that report, some of the things that were disheartening, because you know, people do look at me and discount me as a runner, and or they try to act like I'm new to the sport. And I like to really portray more of the good stuff that happens and kind of talk about the bad stuff in passing. So of course it still happens, but the good outweighs the bad by far. But of course, and I think that one of the things that people miss when they feel bullied in that respect is that sometimes skinny athletic people that have been just easily running their whole lives don't realize how hard it is to not be that. And they're not being mean intentionally. They just don't know.
Right. Yeah. And I don't get bullied, but I am a slow runner. I mean, I call myself a back of the pack, the back, yeah. of the pack runner. And
where the party is.
Yeah. Where the party is. and so, you know, my training runs and everything, I'm working to improve my form. I mean, I'm working to improve myself to be the best I can be, but I'm probably never going to be at the front of the pack. I'm never going to be running with those skinny, fast people who are younger than me and so much faster.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, I like to find, different things, within running that are, maybe not so, of the norm and really embrace that. And so I think that I love being at the back of the pack so much, and continuing to work really hard for that dream, that I actually decided this over this past weekend that I am done waiting to sign up for these 100-mile races. I'm going to start collecting DNFs so that by the time I finally cross the finish line, people are like, no way. Yeah. Ryan Steiner finished this year. He finished. Yeah. So yeah, I'm just, because the back of the pack, it's like, and I think that's like a really good mindset that's worked for me, is that it's about the journey to get there, and people are willing to help you with that journey in the running community. Mm-hmm. And so I'm never going to be fast enough that my ranking will be affected by a bunch of DNFs in the ultra world. So I'm going to start collecting them like belt buckles.
Okay.
How many DNFs do I have?
How many can you get?
How many can I get?
Well, and, but you're still, I mean, from just what little you've said, you shared, it's not like you're going to go into it casually. You're still, I think, I mean,
I train hard.
You train hard and you work hard. I mean, you were talking about your post about being at Galena Sky. It was an 8-hour race. So you, how far did you get? Your goal was to go 50K. How far did you get?
Well, so my A goal was 50K. My B goal was a marathon, and my C goal was don't stop moving the whole 8 hours. And you know, I trained real hard. I'm kind of limited in my terrain for training, because I train most of my training runs, I push my daughter, because I'm a stay-at-home parent from a special needs child, that, and so my daughter, she needs 24/7 like straight in line of sight care. So if I'm going to do anything, I have to do it with her. And so I wasn't really as prepared as I thought I was for the terrain there. Mm-hmm. And
it's not like you can push a stroller out over the roots and rocks on most of the trails. Yeah.
Right. Right. And so I went out, and I knew after my first lap that 50K, that was gone. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, all right. And you know, that runner's mind, you're always doing that math in your head, mm-hmm. you know, where you're at, checking your watch, and you know, what can I pull off? And that's what I like about the timed races, is that your goal can change. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot more flexibility to even just finishing. By 4 hours in, I was doing great. I was still, you know, I was running the downhills and the flats, walking the hills. And it was a brutal course that you didn't realize was brutal until it snuck up on you. And my trekking pole broke, and I used those to offset some of the fatigue, because I am heavy on my legs. The race director, Michelle Hartwig, I was like, my trekking pole broke. And she just believes in everybody so much. And she was like, you can do it without them. I know you can. And so I just kept going, and my quads got thrashed. And so at 4 miles or 4 hours in, I was on track to have 24 miles, which put me at my C goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the next loop, I pushed way too hard, and it ate me up. And so I ended up really just suffering through for the next 3 hours. I would run maybe for 30 seconds, and then I was walking again. And so I just kept on going, and because that's what I trained for, was to do it no matter what, because a lot of my training is training my mind to push through the pain and endure it no matter what.
Okay. So were you able to like rely on your training when you were out there? What were the things that you kind of said to yourself when you were struggling? And do you remember?
I mean, that the only goal that, like, I made three goals so that I would be able to get at least one of them. And my 50K took me 12 hours. So I already knew I could go longer than 8 hours. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, I just told myself that I had this, and that true change happens at the edge of your comfort zone. And definitely my body changed more during that. Once I came home after that, I really felt stronger even before I was completely healed as I was running uphill, you know?
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, mental change and physical change. Uh-huh.
that's good. That's good to be able to incorporate that, that kind of feeling.
Oh yeah. I love, that's one of the things I love most about running is like, that those times when you're out and you're running by yourself and you go inside your head and you're like, you check on your feet, you check on your knees, you check on all that, like that internal body check, mm-hmm. and knowing where I am and getting to know myself and like really thinking of myself as an athlete and acknowledging to me, no matter in comparison to anyone else, but acknowledging to me that I am an athlete and I am at the highest fitness level that I can be at right now. Mm-hmm. And so I like to do those body checks and see that progress. And
so is that part of your normal training? I mean, when you run, you kind of check in with your body that way.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That I think that is, I found that is helpful practice for when you're out on the trail. Cause you really, if you can get in touch with your body while you're training, when you're out on a race, you know whether something is a real issue or whether it's something you can push through.
Yeah.
That's cool. So are you still vegan? Is that still something that's a practice for you?
You know, I am still vegan. However, during the live broadcast this past weekend of Kettle Moraine, we talked to a couple of athletes who've written books, and I got a good conversation about diet with Dean Karnazes. And, you know, I find myself at a plateau. I've been, I'm carb-based athlete, and I was so heavy that now I'm at this really fit state where my body is comfortable. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, I'd like to keep that just in case I need it.
Yeah.
No matter how bad my brain is telling me. So I've been at this plateau. It's been a good 9 months where I just am battling. I'll get down like 5 pounds from here and then I'm right back. Mm-hmm. 5 pounds right back. And so I'm kind of reevaluating that right now and thinking about switching out my beans and soy and grain like area and switching that just a flip-flop with meat, because I mostly eat a really raw food diet. Mm-hmm. And so it really, I could still go into that like hunter-gatherer kind of
right.
diet. And, you know, I know there's people are like already telling me when I suggested I might do it, there's not a lot of data on that. Well, there wasn't a lot of data on vegan either. And I like to gather my own data. So I'm thinking, you know, maybe 6 weeks of trying out meat again. I was talking to one of my friends about it and she was like, what meat are you going to eat first? So yeah, no, actually this weekend has me really weighing my options and seeing if maybe that might help me, because it, you know, it adjusts the fat burning level, mm-hmm. during your running, and you're still taking in carbs. It's not like a ketogenic type thing.
Oh, okay. But, so it's not the keto.
Yeah, no.
Okay. Yeah. I have a friend who's diabetic, and that was my first introduction to the keto diet. And, my weight loss, I lost about 30 pounds in 2017, and it was a modified form of the keto. I didn't go, I mean, the keto yeah. people are crazy. I mean, they
yeah. you know,
yeah. But there are people that it works for. And my friend, she was able to get off of some of her medication. She lost weight. She controls her diabetes with basically eating fats, and, you know, mostly fats, a little bit of protein and a lot of vegetables. And, and I know, you know, online, you know, there's a big debate, you know, between vegan, keto, fat adapted, you know,
paleo.
Yeah. Paleo.
I was leaning more towards a paleo like style. I mean, you know, that hunter gatherer, it really is a direct, just like swip swap for me. Mm-hmm. Like I'm already eating that way, only I don't eat meat.
Right.
Like I eat like lots of raw vegetables. I like to eat the raw nuts and berries and stuff like that. That's a really my main source of food. Mm-hmm. So I'd just be taking the soy products and like oatmeal and stuff that I eat and flopping that with meat for 6 weeks and see if it helps.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's probably more sustainable. I know my friend who's diabetic. She's been on keto for quite a long time, and it's for her, it's a medical issue. Cause
yeah,
she doesn't have a choice, but I know people who are using it as a way of kind of maintaining weight loss. I'm not sure how sustainable that is. And I know, I know that there are people who argue, but it's, it's one of those things. Like I've added back carbs and I've been able to maintain, you know, I gained back a little bit, but I've been able to maintain. And so,
well, I tried keto for a while about a year ago just to see if that would kind of make it boost it faster. And I cannot be hanging out in ketosis that long. I need to have that up and down carb more leveled out. So yeah, I know I feel you. For someone who needs it medically, sure. Mm-hmm. But for someone who's trying to pursue an athletic dreams of endurance, I need some carbs going in.
Yeah. And there are people I see who run 100 miles on, you know, just
fat adapted
water, and like water and fat. And I'm like, wow. Okay. No,
at the aid station, there were people who would come through and you knew who was fat adapted because they're like, water, where's the bacon?
Yeah.
And then they'd shove like 3 pieces of bacon in their mouth and they'd take off fast. And so, you know, I mean, I did get the opportunity to kind of watch what different athletes were eating at the aid station and things like that. And that was interesting. And it definitely reinforced the Dean Karnazes conversation. Yeah.
Well, and I've, the last couple of people I've talked to here on the podcast have both been vegan, and, you know, for them, aid stations are, you know, they have to bring their own food sometimes because, you know, aid stations are pretty carb heavy, and, you know, they just weren't able to know, that they would get the kind of the balance that they needed, that they wanted while they were running. So.
Oh yeah, for sure. I definitely did not rely on the aid station at Galena. Because of those same reasons, mm-hmm. I brought a cooler of all my own food, made my own.
Yeah. Well, and I like the food that's at the aid station, but sometimes what my body tells me is like not the thing that I should be eating. And so, I snarf down a bunch of Oreos because, I haven't had Oreos for a long time and I'm running. So, mm-hmm. and I had a sugar crash about 20 minutes later and it was miserable.
Well, you know, one guy asked for the bacon and I handed it to him and I was like, well, I watched him eat it. And I said to him, I was like, I haven't ate bacon in 3 years, man. He said, seems like you want to. And I was like, I might. And he actually told me that he has a friend who's vegan, that allows himself to eat anything he wants during a race. If he comes into an aid station and he wants bacon, he eats bacon. And I was like, that's genius. I think I might do that in my next race.
Well, and that tends to happen. I mean, I've talked to other people who said that, you know, they crave things that are odd when they're out, you know, when they're out running. And I would advise not the Oreos. That just
sugar crashes bad. Yeah,
they didn't do me any favors. But that's cool. So you said you plateaued. Are you still kind of on a weight loss journey?
Oh, for sure, for sure. I have a lot of extra skin, but I don't want to heavily pursue it until I'm in what do they call it, Wonderland, where you're under the 200 mark.
Okay.
And then I might try to pursue getting it removed. Okay. But I want to be real fit. I want to be as fit as I'm able to be. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to be around for my daughter as long as possible. And, you know, I love to read about running and statistics about running, not so much learn about runners, but what we know about the body parts of running and things like that. Mm-hmm. A man's running peak, he has two of them, one in his teen 20s, and then a second running peak in your 60s. So I'm like, okay, I have time.
I have not heard this. Now this is,
I've said it a few times in a few interviews. I think I'm going to have to find this article again and post it and show people. So it was really quite amazing. Like women have a longer streak that is actually like between 30 and 45. That's their fast streak. That's where they're going to, that's the age where they're going to run and beat the men.
Okay.
And that was just this one article, but it fascinated me enough to be like, yeah, I'm going to. And so then men have the younger teen to early 20s running peak where they're at their fastest. And then they have a second running peak in their 60s where they can sometimes, if they keep their body fit, reach as fast or faster than they were in their early 20s.
My goodness.
According to this article. And I was like, so there's still a chance.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah, no, my goal is that even with this extra skin, that I know inside that I am in that peak of condition. I want my Garmin to tell me that I'm 20. Then I'm done trying to lose weight.
Okay. That's good. Well, and that's fascinating to me because I was a runner in my late 20s and I started with the goal of an ultramarathon at age 60. And so, you know, I'm kind of in that and I'm
in your peak.
Yeah. But I'm not running nearly as fast as I was when I was in my late 20s. So, I'll see if I can get there. My times have come down from, you know, over a couple of years, but, yeah, I'll see if I can get there. That's good news.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you find that article, I'd love to see it.
For sure. I'm definitely going to go look for it. Cause there's been a few people have been like, yeah, really? I'm like, no, really? I read it. I love that kind of information. It sticks to me, sticks in my head and it inspires me to know, you know, it's not too late.
Yeah. So what, you've got fitness goals. Do you have any race goals that you have? I mean, you said you want to be able to finish 100 miles. Do you have a race in mind that's like your dream race?
I mean, oh, I have a lot of racing dreams, a whole lot of different goals. I like my first 100 mile to be the Hennepin 100. That's where I'm running my 50K this year. It's a flat and fast course, and the terrain allows me to push my daughter, so it's something we can do together. And that's one of the things that's real important to me, is to be an example of inclusiveness. And my daughter uses a wheelchair, and sometimes running events and things like that aren't as accessible to people like her. And I want to be a tool to help that be possible. And so I definitely want that to be my first one, because I'm comfortable there. But I have a lot of running dreams beyond that. Who runs ultra marathons and doesn't think of one of the big ones, like, you know, Leadville?
Yeah.
There's a DNF for my collection.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I looked at Leadville. It was like, after you finish a distance, you're like, okay, what's next? What can be my next? I looked at Leadville, and then I thought, no, you're not. I knew that would be an automatic DNF if I tried that.
Well, and so when I was drawn into ultra marathoning, it was like ultralight backpacking on speed. And I've always liked backpacking. I like survival in the woods, hiking, and that deep woods navigation, getting away from technology. And so definitely like an A goal in life is to at least be bib number one at the Barkley marathons. So, you know, bib number one, the human sacrifice.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just want to experience it. I want to experience it. And I know it's a place where elite athletes go to get ate up. And so I don't know that it's a reasonable goal, but I like to make unreasonable goals and then just keep firing toward it. So.
Yeah. That's kind of cool. Do you, you talked about backpacking. Have you considered any kind of adventure any adventure races? Wait. Or I mean, they have navigation, of course.
Yeah. Of course, yes. I have so many racing goals. I just like, oh, that one sounds fun. Oh, that sounds fun. A friend of mine, and I wish I knew the name of the race she's doing, but she's doing a 3-day adventure course this August. And every time she talks about wanting people there with her, I'm just like, I want to go. But I have to limit myself. You know, I have a family and I enjoy doing stuff with them. So I've been trying to convince my wife that we need to make a goal towards like doing some, like do the whole Ice Age Trail and then work from there and do and work our way to the Appalachian Trail, you know, while carrying our daughter, like switching back and forth so we can do it with the family. So,
yeah, that would be it. That would be fun. You know, my, you're talking about carrying your daughter. My sister had cerebral palsy. And when I was a child, my parents packed her up mountains and I mean, they carried her a lot of places. So,
Paula has cerebral palsy.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And they make this thing called a freeloader that is for like up to 110 pounds. It sets her on your back, kind of like a baby carrier, but it's amazing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this was, you know, my
parents, yeah, I'm sure
my parents had nothing like that,
which is even more incredible, really.
Yeah. 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 So yeah, that is, but it's, you know, my sister had a lot of richness in her life. I mean, they got to be a point where my parents couldn't take care of her. So, but, yeah. But yeah, for those early years, we all had a lot of experiences as a family.
That's awesome. So, that's real awesome.
So, yeah. So that's definitely doable to do something like the Appalachian Trail.
Oh yeah. I mean, the whole being fit and all of that it's definitely fueled by being able to share that with Kala.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So how old is your daughter?
She's five.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's cool. Yeah. Well, I hope you get a chance to take some of those adventures because she'll remember.
We're currently trying to hit every state park that we can get here in Indiana, and just checking them all off and hiking. So we go and we hike them, and then we bike them, and then we run in her chariot. Yeah, I push her in her chariot. So we're trying to get all those as a family just to make her really love it. Cause she has cerebral palsy and autism. And so she's really scared to go out.
Okay. Okay.
And so, yeah, no, we're going to do those adventures. Cause those are those are what make our family close.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. So what is your, what is your next goal? Your next goal for racing? I mean,
Well, I'm running the Hennepin, 50K.
You're running the Hennepin 50K is your next goal race. Okay.
Yeah.
That's this year. Okay.
Yeah. In October. That's my big thing this year. I have a lot of openings next year for to see what I want to do. The only thing I have real big coming that I want to do next year is, after volunteering at Kettle Moraine, I am going to do the fun run next year. So the 38 miles.
Okay. So is Kettle Moraine, does it just have the 100? Is that the only option?
They have 100, and a 100K,
100K
and okay. 50K and then a 38 mile fun run.
Okay. Okay. So the fun run is between the 50K and the 100K.
Yeah. And the 100K. Okay. And it starts, late in the day. So that they're like, then releasing a bunch of fresh runners out onto the field in the same direction that the 100 milers, they run out and back one direction, and then they actually come through the finish line and out and back another direction. And so midway through the 100 mile race, the fun runners are set free. So there's company for the 100 milers.
that's genius.
Yeah.
that is genius, because especially on an out and back, if you could get feeling like there's nobody else in the universe being out there all by yourself at night.
Yeah. So they send out all these fresh people.
Okay.
It was fun working the aid station because the aid station I was working at was mile 77. And so people were pretty tired. I saw a few DNFs. It was really quite an emotional experience to watch the racers connect with family, because it was one that your crew could, it was an aid station that crew could get to and everything. So I got to see wives proud of husbands, and it was pretty cool. You could tell who was a 100-miler and who was a fun run, because it was really hot and humid during the day. And people were broke down hard. And so the fun runners that had been running in the evening and into the quite chilly night were just, they would pop into the aid station, jumping around and happy. I want to be one of those people at next year's Kettle Moraine. I want to be happy, not broken down. But someday I do want to be broken down in the 100-miler.
Yeah, because at about 77 miles is where the race really kind of gets interesting for if you're doing 100 miles, especially if it's been hot. That's kind of, so what is the Kettle Moraine course like? I mean, is it pretty, it's an out and back two different directions.
Yeah. So a lot of it's on the Ice Age Trail. And so it's kind of, there's a whole bunch that's meadow. So it's nice and hot and lots of just prairie grass all around you. And then there's some technical single track through a really great canopy. And it's kind of sandy, some roots, a little bit of technical. And then a whole lot of towards right when you go past mile 77, there's a huge climb up to a lake. And so then you have that deer fly type area. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful course. And I think like what I liked about just the pictures and stuff that I saw of people getting on the race and all that is the variety of the course. It really shows a lot of what the Midwest has to offer.
Okay.
All in one race.
Yeah. So are there, is there rocky areas as well?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, nothing like you're going to find in Colorado or pebbles.
Yeah. Pebbles. Okay. Yeah. Now, some areas of the Midwest, I mean, there's a race in Oklahoma that the race director intentionally made it so that there's more elevation gain than Leadville.
No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. Now,
what's this race on? Right.
It's called the Outlaw 100. It's in Wilburton, Oklahoma. It's a, the Outlaw is the, I think that's the race director. It's like the Outlaw Series is what they call it. So it's there's a lot of races around Oklahoma, but yeah.
I have a 5-hour circle around my home where I'm allowed to drive to a race for a weekend.
This would probably be a little bit outside of that.
And then I get one big race a year where we make a vacation.
But I paced somebody for the Outlaw 2 years ago, and it's a 20 mile loop, and it's intense. There's a lot of there's enough elevation that the runnable parts are less than what you have to power hike. So
that sounds like a lot of fun though.
Yeah it's beautiful. And well, I was there, I didn't see the trail during the day. It was all at night, but yeah, it's a beautiful area.
I love that night running in a group. I mean, I love a night run by myself, but the night running in a group is a whole lot of fun because you don't know, you hear them coming, and then suddenly there's a bright light, and and then lots of periods of darkness, but you're not alone. So I like that.
Well, there was a section where we were going through boulders that were the size of a small house. And
so that's kind of scary in the dark.
It was really cool to see it at night. But I was pacing, was down there to pace somebody this year as well, and there was ice and snow, and it was like it was unusual for Oklahoma. He ended up, I wasn't able to pace him because he had to drop before I got there. But
do they offer any other distances or just the 100?
No, they've got, I think they even have a half marathon. So I think there's half marathon, marathon, 100, they've got one's 100, they offer 135 as well.
Nice.
It's a fun community. It's pretty remote. And not a lot of people, but it's a beautiful course. So yeah, if you could add that to one of your, bucket lists.
Oh, I mean, I just keep on adding. And the closer they are to me, the more likely they are to happen. Mm-hmm.
So, well, Kettle Moraine is one that people that I know, from my group here in Kansas City, they've gone to run Kettle Moraine. In fact, there was one or two that were there this year. And so that's kind of been on my radar. I've heard about it. That sounds like that could be fun to do.
Yeah.
Maybe next year. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great. It was a great race to be a part of. I'm the only thing I'm disappointed about is that I didn't run any of it.
Well, you were there to help and to volunteer. And sometimes that's fun to just be there to kind of be behind the scenes and encourage other people.
It's a good way to refeed your passion. You know, like I've been feeling a little off on all my runs, and it turned out I had a little bit of an iron and B12 deficiency, but also I needed that emotional rejuvenation as well about how much I love ultra running by seeing how much other people love ultra running. So yeah, volunteering is definitely a good.
Yeah. And you get that shot of community. I mean, ultra runners tend to be solitary when we're training oftentimes, because you're out there running by yourself in the middle of the woods, or running by yourself at some point.
Yeah.
And then even in ultra marathon, the races, you don't necessarily run with people all the time. And so,
I mean, it was a 3-mile loop at Galena, and I was by myself 90% of that race. So, you know.
Yeah. And if a 3-mile loop, you can still get spread out. And was that during the daytime?
It was a day race.
Okay. Yeah. You have that, but you also, when you're out there, you have a feeling like you're still part of a group. You know that before long, somebody's going to come by, you're going to say hi, and everyone I've ever met has been encouraging on the trail.
Oh yeah. I saw a shirt on Facebook today that said, ultra marathon, where people go out usually in the woods running, trying to find the next party with food.
Yes. If the aid stations are done well, they are like a party.
Yeah. So you just have, you know, periods of 1 or 2 hours of solitude and then a party and then some solitude and then a party.
Yeah. That's cool. Well, it's, thank you a lot for joining me for this. Yeah. I appreciate it. And,
sure.
So if people wanted to connect with you, or if, had questions, where's a good place for them to reach out to you if they wanted to chat with you?
My Facebook is under my name, Ryan Steiner, and a lot of people message me on there. But if you're just wanting to follow my workout stats and stuff like that, then I am on Strava under my name, Ryan Steiner.
Okay.
And then I also post a picture of my workout every day and like how fast or whatever I did on my Instagram, which is Running with Kala, and that is Kala.
Okay. Well, I'll make sure to try to put those in the show, the links in the notes for the show as well. So, that's would be good. And I know there, I guess, what if you had if you had some piece of advice to give yourself 10 years ago, if you could speak back to yourself, what would you say? Or to somebody who is in that same situation.
If you want something, get up and go get it. Like I sat around and I dreamed about all these things that I wanted, but I never put my feet in front of the other and chased any goals until now. And so, you know, chase your dreams, literally.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Trail Talk. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and review, and don't forget to subscribe. That way you won't miss out on any new episodes. If you'd like to contact me, you can find me on Facebook as at Ultramarathon Mindset, or you can find me on the web at theultramarathonmindset.com. Remember, your mindset is the key to success in running and in life, and developing a strong mindset is a skill you can improve. Hey, thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time.